It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we are joined today with an anarchist based out of Athens, Greece. We're going to be talking about the pandemic, how it's playing out there. But more broadly, we're going to be talking about the lockdown itself in response to the pandemic by the state and how different forces in society are responding to that within Greece, whether it's the anarchist movement, it's leftists, it's the far right, whether it's the state itself taking advantage of the pandemic to enact draconian laws or to roll back certain things over the years that people have fought for. And we're going to be kind of using that as a launch pad to talk more broadly about how the coronavirus response and the lockdown and the response from various governments has played out across various countries in so-called Europe. But just to kind of get us started, just give us some broad strokes and some observations of stuff that you're seeing in Greece and perhaps beyond. And, you know, we'll get into this stuff in a lot more detail as we go forward. But just kind of off the top of your head, I think, what do people kind of need to know going into this conversation in general about either big picture stuff or general context?
Well, first of all, considering I speak to some American folks here and there, I should just point out that I don't think the lockdown that we're experiencing in Greece and potentially across Europe is anything that people can really comprehend. I understand that there are stay-at-home orders and some attempts at mandates in the states, but obviously federally coordinating anything in the states amidst the, you know, politicization of the coronavirus is incredibly complicated. And the infection rates in the states seem to correlate with that. However, here, just to give some perspective, the lockdown, the mandates are enforced and real. The curfew is at 9 p.m. On the weekends, it was just changed in some of the major cities such as Athens and Thessaloniki to 6 p.m. Your only way that you can go outside if you're detained by police is with either an SMS message that you send to a state number or if you write a written declaration with one of six reasons that a cop has to determine whether you're validly following the rules for movement. This is enforced. Obviously, it's enforced with an approach of double standards, usually affecting people of color or immigrants or people in more impoverished neighborhoods, or in the case of Athens, say Exarchia, a neighborhood that's disliked by police, is more likely to lead to someone's detention and having to show proof of movement. But still, this is the actual measure across the country. So the lockdown is very real. It's the only people when you go out after curfew are essentially delivery workers and police and, homeless people. So it's a very dystopian and surreal experience and thing to witness. So I think that just pointing out the difference of the experience when it comes to how the government is dealing with the coronavirus, just in terms of measures that are actually being enforced compared to what I understand is happening in the states, is an important thing to try to understand. The irony, though, specifically to Greece, is that while this lockdown is unbelievably stringent in terms of the way it's enforced and so forth, I would say it's clearly corrupt and filled with double standards and opportunism by those in control. However, ironically, it's been determined by Bloomberg that out of 53 countries, I think with a GDP of over 200 billion, the study was made, that Greece is third to last in terms of the combined factors of negative consequences of coronavirus itself and management, meaning lockdown versus infection rate, lockdown versus economic consequences, everyday life experience of those in lockdown versus the like I said, the infection rate. The States clearly is a terrible, catastrophic situation that, you know, from what I understand, apart from heart disease and cancer, COVID is third in the States and about to surpass cancer. But like, that is to be expected from not only the, you know, ridiculous culture war they have about coronavirus in the States, but also just the Trump administration's dealing with it. But here we have all the horrible social consequences, economic consequences, and individually speaking, emotional and mental illness consequences of such a stringent lockdown on people. But still, ICUs are constantly threatened at being capacity, which I'm sure we'll discuss eventually. Instead of a new investment in things such as ICUs and medical expansion, the government here is trying to deal with it in an almost purely authoritarian way of divesting from hospitals and reinvesting in police to enforce these measures that aren't actually preventing the spread of infection. And to give one example, which would provide a metaphor, I suppose, for the absurd and dystopian situation, for lack of a better word, we have out here, is that there's been multiple attempts at socially distanced, small protests, and even on a few occasions, strikes of medical workers in hospitals that have actually been kettled and disrupted and fined, and even in some cases, people have been detained and arrested, just demanding further PPE and investment from the government. So it's just, you know, there's a saying they have here that there's, you know, cops everywhere, but ICUs nowhere. And I suppose that is, you know, the best first introduction I can say in terms of what, you know, we're experiencing, what I see.
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of how the state has kind of rolled out all of these policies?
I'm not an academic, nor am I a journalist, but speaking from my experience and the things that I understand and have read, I guess, when first hit the fan in the world last March, Greece decided to lock down quite early. Also, coincidentally, at that time, you know, Greece is essentially, you know, a tourism economy in a lot of ways. And closing its borders in March and having, you know, an extreme lockdown early prevented a surge in cases, and it was considered to be kind of the poster boy for successful governments. And the government, you know, rallied its base and prided itself with a low infection rate, low death rate. However, a lot of it was simply a matter of luck when you evaluate the, you know, lead causes of coronavirus spreading. For example, in the States, it seems like factory farms, big production, warehouses, and so forth, where people are also forced to commute, you know, in packed environments, and also work in packed environments where, you know, protection isn't possible. There's not so much production or these types of facilities across the country here, you know, and a lot of people work season, and, you know, people traveling into the country wasn't at its peak that it would be in the summer when the tourists flock here. So due to the circumstances of, you know, the timing and also the decision to lock down quickly and early, there was very low infection rate at the beginning. However, quickly going into the summer, when lockdown started to be lifted, there was continued to be a divestment from hospitals, reinvesting in police. There was clearly significant pressure on business elite to reopen the borders, even though obviously anyone would expect a decrease in travel tourism. For one, Americans could never get together to ever be accepted back into the EU. They lost that. And the border restrictions and requirements, anyone could predict that the tourism rates would drop 90%. It would just long-term cause more infection rates that would, disrupt the economy. But to appease the demands of business elite, they essentially opened the borders with some requirements. But while there was a 90% reduction rate in tourism this last summer, there were so many identified cases of tourists coming here and bringing the infection and so forth. And as the summer came to an end fall and winter came, infection rates just started again, kind of out of control. I think there's close to 6,000 deaths here. About 1,000 cases per day is the average. But what's happening is this kind of absurd approach of the government of easing restrictions based on a need for business. And then when the consequences happen as a result of easing the restrictions in terms of an explosion of infection rates, they generally, almost every time, run back into stringent lockdown and, without joking, try to encourage people to blame themselves. It's almost amusing, if it wasn't so sad, but this government has this tendency of, for example, they originally planned on closing churches around the Christmas season. Considering that the majority of people who attend church during the holidays by choice are usually those over the age of 70. They last minute decided to reopen the churches due to pressure from the Orthodox Church, which is unbelievably powerful in Greece. And also they promised a month in advance to ease the restrictions around consumption, specifically into shopping for Christmas gifts. So they basically said, go outside, sign the paper that you're exercising, and move freely to buy what you want to stimulate the economy. People don't have so many funds because people are just getting 534 euros a month if they're out of work, which is not really enough to live comfortably here. But people went out, used it to be social, and the infection rates obviously spiked again. Then for New Year's, due to pressure, they told people that they could move around in the same way, and the cops will be more chill, literally. And then there was a spike again a week later. So it's just kind of, and now there's this new spike and ICUs are almost at capacity. However, the city of Athens spent €1 million on Christmas decorations, but you still can't get free hand sanitizer in the subways. So metros are still packed in the mornings for people who are able to still have work. Now they've come on the television and said that they're doing a harder lockdown, meaning the curfew at 6 p.m. on the weekends, more complicated process of purchasing clothes through scheduling appointments to buy the clothes. And they're saying that the reason that the infection rates are going up is not because of failure of government mismanagement. It's because there's secret house parties happening across the country. The evil Super Bowl parties that they were worried about in the States over the weekend, they're claiming happened in Greece, and that's, why they're doing this for lockdown. So it's just back and forth, up and down. It's, you know, it's impossible for people to plan. It's impossible for people to know what to expect, what they're going to do for money the next month. You know, it's just a really unbelievably precarious time. You know, I can't find a better word to describe how it feels to live under these circumstances where you are basically at the mercy of the state in a way that I've never experienced in my life. And also I feel confused as to how to respond to, because in many ways I see the opportunism, I see how they're using the coronavirus, but there's also a personal battle of understanding, you know, that, you know, there are demographics of people who are more affected. And I want to take precautions and show respect, but, you know, it's really about finding a balance and understanding, you know, what makes sense. And for me, apart from all the things I just described of, you know, making exceptions for business, making exceptions for, you know, powerful institutions such as the church, any government that is divesting in hospitals and medical expansion and medical staff and reinvesting in police to enforce measures just doesn't make any sense to me, of having an intention of being concerned for an infection rate as much as, you know, retaining power in society, if that makes any sense.
To what degree are you seeing mismanagement in terms of the state? Like, how is the state basically continuing this crisis forward? Like, what are they doing that's mismanaging things?
It's really complicated because I don't want to imply that I could ever approve of a state managing anything. However, to be specific about it, I suppose a great example would just simply be the double standard element. You know, there are, you know, a neighborhood like Exarchia where the police, you know, feel contempt because historically they have been unwelcome here. You know, you need to have your documentation to explain to the outside. You need to expect the possibility of being detained. You know, if you're in an immigrant neighborhood out after curfew, you can expect the possibility of being detained. If you go to certain neighborhoods in the suburbs of the city or in the wealthier districts of the city, you will see people gathered, people sitting, people not fulfilling the documentation clearly. However, it's being tolerated by the state. Additionally, you know, there's so many instances that it's hard to think of ones precisely, but I suppose giving metaphors of absurd things that happen would be helpful for those listening. So I suppose one thing that I found fairly ridiculous is that bosses are able to provide paperwork for their employees to be out after curfew or to be out during the day without one of the reasons to validate movement. And when you go to certain areas that are doing delivery and takeaway, because nothing is open, there's only delivery and takeaway, however they're trying to end takeaway briefly. apart from that, you go to the fancier districts and restaurants, some of which are clearly not having coffee delivered or taken away at you know, after curfew. And you go to, you pass places that have very little likely delivery business or takeaway business, coffee shops, you know, and so restaurants that are extremely fancy, for example. And, you know, there's a group of people hanging out, you know, clearly none of them working there, but the bosses signed the papers for them to be there, you know? And it just, you know, it's incredibly ironic, you know, that, like, in dystopian, for lack of a better term, again, just to have it be in a position that after curfew, your two best options of being outside, apart from a medical emergency, is to getting permission from a boss or to walk your dog, you know? So it's just like, you know, I suppose this is one example of just the absurdity of how the actual measures are being enforced. You know, when you go around in the day, you see police huddled and gathered everywhere, truly. It's it's a coincidence that the new administration has hired an entire new police force in the last few years, but they're fully implemented in the streets. And you know, usually it's cops gathered without protection, talking with each other in large numbers. When they detain people, they're usually not masked. They're usually touching people's things. And it's just the double standard approach. Also, I mean, their assemblies are banned. Both the government passed a measure to ban assemblies in the country, which is an unbelievable thing that happened some months ago. But now with coronavirus, they use that more so to enforce even harsher public pressure under rationalization of coronavirus precaution. And for example, it's a very weird situation if a group of people socially distance gather to demonstrate for the memory of Alexis Grigoropoulos, who was killed in 2008, recently in student demonstrations against policies to implement police on university campuses. They will kettle these people. They will pack people with tear gas. They will arrest people in mass. They'll essentially force people and prevent people from being socially distanced. It just exposes their true intentions, obviously. However, on these days where they ease restrictions for the sake of the economy, such as prior to Christmas, you can pass a fucking McDonald's and see 150 people chilling outside, comparable to some demonstrations, with absolutely no disruption from police. So it's this kind of relentless double standard that just, it just feels like this is going to hopelessly never end, And it's, even if you follow the rules, even if you get your SMS or your documentation, always prepared to go outside, if you look a certain way, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, if you are not white, for sure, you have to seriously be concerned about getting a 300-euro fine, which in this country is more than half of a decent salary and more than half of what people are actually getting paid to be unemployed at this time.
Let's talk about how the various forces in Greece have responded. Let's start on the far right.
Since the verdict against the Golden Dawn group came out, it took a huge blow to the organization. But, I would say there's so many... It's such a complicated question, but for one, the war on migrants on the grassroots level by groups such as Golden Dawn or fascist hooligans and so forth, I'm sure this is still happening. Migrants in this country who are not in refugee camps are experiencing a level of economic precarity that is even worse than the horrible economic situation that all Greeks face. The thing is that what's happening is that since this began, going back to the original lockdown in March, the policies implemented at refugee camps are inflicting a level of damage that is unprecedented to the refugee crisis even prior to this beginning. So the pain and trauma that is being inflicted on refugees in this country right now who are waiting asylum in refugee camps that are in quarantine is as heinous as any grassroots fascist attack. The most famous and largest refugee camp in Europe burned down a few months ago, and what it's been replaced with is tents on an island with a strong winter, with very little hygienic facilities to take precaution, extreme mandates. People are unable to leave the camp. And as a result, due to the anti-refugee policy of the administration and those who are managing camps, it's reflecting in the way that they are treating those inside. So what's happening is that the crisis is so intense across the country. There's very little attention on refugee camps. Funding is unbelievably limited just to compensate for the economic crisis in Greece. So things are just heinous in refugee camps in this country. Additionally, all under the guise of coronavirus, along with other policies that have been pushed through specifically with university police, against assembly, and so forth, various policies have been pushed forward that are complicating asylum, complicating the ability for refugees to move. And on the islands that refugee camps are, or the places in Greece where they are, which are typically isolated and intentionally isolated, the locals there are very unsupportive, very bigoted. Not in all cases. There are some support networks, both by anarchist groups, left groups, and just humanitarian groups. But, you know, those people face potential attacks by locals. They potential bureaucratic prosecution by the state. It's complicated all mutual aid efforts and solidarity efforts of directly helping refugees. The lockdown has just affected all of this and been catastrophic for refugees. And there's just very little effort or investment apart from, you know, showing face to the EU or, you know, to the world when it pays attention to the, you know, humanitarian disaster happening here. Apart from these brief, you know, attempts of alleviating international pressure, it's just complicated an already horrible situation. But in terms of the grassroots right or the fascist, there is, it's not, you know, I would say there's a business right who is against the lockdown in very similar ways that the state has shown to say we need to preserve the integrity of the free market, no matter the life cost, you know, which seems to be the theme in the States. Here there's a push for that, which was, you know, manifested during the summer with this unnecessary lifting of measures to increase, you know, petty profits from tourism for a very few. So there's that pressure. And there's on another element of the right, there's the kind of Christian right, which probably resembles this QAnon, you know, absurdity in the States, which, you know, who the fuck knows? They're against, they think, you know, coronavirus is likely a Jewish conspiracy by Soros to infect people with 5G or whatever fucking absurd things that they spout. You know, so there's this thinking. There's been some demonstrations and appearances by this group, but they're not nearly as strong as what I've seen is going on in the States, but they are there. I also would say just the general attitude of people on the right is actually about it's not like the States in terms of being so obsessed with these conspiracy theories. The Christian is a, they are a big element, and especially there's been some attacks against cops who were closing churches briefly by fascist hooligans. There's been some demonstrations against 5G, but overall they're not as visible as what's happening in the States. And I'd say the right that is in power, that's pushing these anti-refugee policies, that's pushing you know, new mandates in prisons that absolutely put people in danger in terms of coronavirus, and the business right that is trying to lift measures in order to increase petty profits at the expense of the vulnerable population. These are the right that is actually really, kind of capitalizing off the situation. And I think that it's important to note that this right is also a right that tries to become, appear more European, more liberal, and use less kind of hyperbolic fascist rhetoric. But their policies, whether more polite or legal or institutional, are causing just much more significant damage than fascists could even want on a street level. Apart from this, I would say that, you know, the anarchist movement is very much alive. It exists in, you know, attempts to gather, attempts to demonstrate, banners all the time, graffiti everywhere in the city. But, you know, it's very complicated time, as I noted, with all the restrictions and the opportunism for police to just do what they want. And I think to add to a description of the right, I think the police love coronavirus. They love it. They love being able to stop people as they wish without reason. They love the control they feel over they have over certain neighborhoods, especially immigrant neighborhoods. You know, they love the opportunity it has to also detain immigrants and deport them, or put them back in camps if they were outside of camps, you know. And they also love the fact that, like I keep citing, that they have, it's almost an authoritarian experiment. It's to deal with coronavirus through an extreme enforcement of measures as opposed to an extreme advancement in medical capability, for infection and those suffering. So I think also just to say, you know, that the police love it should reflect also how the right feels. But it's more complicated because I think they love the lockdown, but they probably also feel some affinity with the churches being open and things like this. But there's not a obsession with wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, even though I think that people on the right or Christians don't care as much. But I would also say people on the left, it's not like in the States, it seems almost like, maybe I'm mistaken, but people think it's almost like liberal or the left decision to wear a mask or be precautious. Like, that's just not the case here, you know? I think it's also really important to note, though, is that people generally, I think, are just suffering emotionally and on mental illness levels, you know, as a result of this lockdown. Isolation is inevitable. You know, this is one of the most social and like Mediterranean, you know, countries, like I would say, in the world, you know, so people are really struggling. And I think that this combined with like, an economic depression that's already happening, but is just kind of stagnant because of some EU funding that keeps people from going hungry. Not everyone at all, but enough to, I suppose, keep things this kind of stagnant crisis. You know, so I think that like the overall experience of most people is going to lead to either an eruption in, you know, a pandemic of depression that runs parallel with this medical crisis, but also just, you know, there has to be a tipping point of this stagnant crisis. And I believe that all the political forces are kind of we're not on pause, but society is on pause. And I think at some point, I don't know when, and I think everyone's asking this question, things are going to erupt.
Έτσι χαβαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουνε. Θα βάλουμε βόμβα, θα ανατινάξουμε τη βουλή και μέσα τους 300 θα κάψουμε. Θα βγούμε στους δρόμους και θα τα σπάσουμε. Μήπως έτσι χαβαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουνε. Θα βγούμε στους δρόμους, θα δείτε διαβόλους. Θα μάθετε πως δεν χαβαριάζουμε από νόμους. Όλοι με μολότοφ στα χέρια, είμαι μαφαιριά. Θα βγουνε όλα τα αλάνια από τα άλλη μεριά. Θα βγει όλη η λέρα και οι μπάτσοι θα κάνουν πέρα. Το νου σας δεν κοπροσκυλά, μην γίνει νύχτα μέρα. Θα κάνουμε αντασία και θα σκάσει αλυτεία. Και η Ελλάδα θα γίνει Γαλλία με το Σιβία. Του τύπα να πολέμουν σαν ζουλού. Μάχη Μακελίδη, πολέμος από παντού. Θα σκάσουνε τσακάλια από πέρυσι και από μπάρκα. Και εσύ πρωθυπουργέ θα κοιτάς σαν το μαλάκα. Κάποιοι θα σκάσουνε με κουμπούρια. Άλλοι με καλάθνικοφ με ούζι τσεκούρια. Κάποιοι με γκάνια μαστούρια. Θα μπουν με φούρια χαμούρια. Θα γίνει γιούρια. Θα πει κρατήσει χάος τρε σαμπούρια.
Ποιο κράτος, ποια αξία, ποιοι μπάση και ποια ουσία. Κάψτε τα όλα να ξεβρωμήσει η κοινωνία. Αστυνομία, τρομοκρατία και ο λαός σε απεργία. Απορώ πως μπορώ να ζω με 800 ευρώ. Θέλω να δω νεκρό τον κάθε πολιτικό. Εκείνον που λέει πως μάχεται για το καλό μου, αλλά με τα λεφτά μου χτίζει δικό το εξοχικό. Επίθεση σε αυτούς που κάθονται στα σαλόνια. Δεν είμαστε πιόνια, βγείτε στους δρόμους με καδρόνια. Με πέτρες και μολότοφ διεκδικούμε ακόμα. Να πάρουμε πίσω ό,τι μας κλέβαν τόσα χρόνια. Δακρυγόνα.
Το είμαστε αδρείς, σταγόνα, σταγόνα. Στην ατμόσφαιρα βρώμα ή πτώμα. Σα ποια εικόνα, εθνικός αναβρασμός, εξοργισμένος λαός. Μυρίζει επανάσταση, πλησιάζει ο καιρός.
Θα βάλουμε βόμβα, θα ανατινάξουμε τη βουλή και μέσα τους 300 θα κάψουμε. Θα βγούμε
μας έτσι χαμαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουνε.
Θα βάλουμε βόμβα, θα ανατινάξουμε την βουλή και μέσα τους 300 θα κάψουμε. Θα βγούμε στους δρόμους και θα τα σπάσουμε. Μήπως έτσι χαμαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουνε.
Έχω σαλτάρει τελείως σου λέω, έχω ξεφύγει γύρω μου. Αγανακτισμένοι μας στους δρόμους βγαίνουν λίγοι, θέλει σπάσιμο και χάψιμο. Μας και χαμπαριαστούνε, θέλει πράξεις για να δούνε πως αυτά τα εννοούμε. Πως θα γίνει κυλαράδες, μόνο παναπάτσι και πούστιδες παπάδες. Καβατζώνουνε χιλιάδες κάθε μέρα. Κι άλλοι με οικογένειες πεινάνε, μα προσπαθούνε μπρο για να τα βγάλουν πέρα. Όλοι μαζί τα φάγαμε μα. Αναφέρεσαι σε σένα και σ' άλλους 299. Μιλά σωστά, φτιάξε πύλες κι άλλα τόσα εξοχικά. Στις εκομπίνες διακίνησε όπλα και ναρκωτικά. Αν καμηθείτε, θα έρθει η μέρα. Σε κάθε λέρα μια σφαίρα και την βουλή την άγμα στον αέρα. Γιατί δεν παίρνουν από λόγια. Καταστρέφουνε τα όνειρά μας της Ελλάδος στα λαμόγια.
Με κουκούλες, όπλα και μολότοφ. Πρώτον, έρχεται η επανάσταση των γεγονότων. Έρχεται αυτό που θα μείνει στην ιστορία. Ξεσήκωμα μαζί για να μας δώσουνε αξία. Προς όλων των ελεύθερων. Δεύτερον, προς των υπουργών. Ζήτε προς το παρόν. Καθήκια καθηκιών. Για αυτούς που τα απαγόρευσαν δεν έχω επώνυμο. Θα δείτε τι θα γίνει νόμιμο. Απόλυση των πλήτων, όλων των ψιλομύτων. Θα και θα παίρνουν λεφτά με αυτά. Απορρίπτονται τα λόγια και η εμφάνιση των τρίτων. Σούρτα, φέρτα, σουτ και δίρτων. Rap war, map back. Πάτα για να μπει ξανά το track. Το rap μας πιο εθιστικό από crack. Που το ανάζει και παθαίνει track. Απ' το rap attack, tic tac. Απ' το rap attack, tic tac.
Θα βάλουμε βόμβα, θα ανατινάξουμε την βουλή και μέσα τους 300 θα κάψουμε. Θα βγούμε στους δρόμους και θα τα σπάσουμε. Μήπως έτσι χαμπαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουμε. Θα βάλουμε βόμβα, θα ανατινάξουμε την βουλή και μέσα τους 300 θα κάψουμε. Θα βγούμε στους δρόμους και θα τα σπάσουμε. Μήπως έτσι χαμπαριαστούνε και κάτι αλλάξουμε.
You brought up the anarchist movement. Let's talk about that. But before we get into that, let's talk about the general left response.
Well, it's important to understand Greece is very different than the States. I think the States generally has just had a resurgence of a left and anarchist anti-fascist movement. I mean, from the Trump years and post-Bernie, post-Occupy and so forth, but I would say generally, while anarchist and anti-fascist have only entered the mainstream dialogue in recent years, I would say this kind of liberal Congress calls for stimulus checks and mass mandates. These are just variations of the right. Nancy Pelosi in Greece would be seen as a right-wing politician. The policies and authoritarian measures being implemented by the New Democracy administration, I consider to be, borderline far right, before something like neo-Nazi group like Golden Dawn. But in the States, the same administration could be considered on point with Biden, So I just want to say that, apart from that, another thing is that the left is very strong in Greece. I mean, Kukoue, the official Communist Party of Greece, is in parliament. There's actually, it's not like the States where there's a two-party political system. I mean, whether or not I don't support this, but it is actually like a parliamentary democracy, which is like an actual state democracy. the left and anarchists are not cooperating in the same way that they would in the States. And most anarchists would never identify as left. But I want to say that groups that are opposed to the administration authoritarian or fascist ideologies, not necessarily the Communist Party, but we could say that overall groups like Syriza or the Communist Party or more left-leaning political groups are focused on the opportunism that I've been discussing by the state in terms of passing policies, anti-migrant policies, anti-assembly policies, implementing new authoritarian measures on universities here. There is almost a unified voice against this. And also, I think the one of the largest focuses of the left here has been the divestment of hospitals, which started before the pandemic, because the prior government, as awful as they were an actual left government known as Syriza. which actually implemented quite a few medical advancement policies and invested in hospitals. The immediate administration's decision to democracy was to divest and invest in police, and now it's doubling down on that, even amidst the coronavirus. I don't care what statistics people might want to contradict or what lies the state are saying. There was a contract given or attempted contract that's been broken by the government at the beginning last year in March to nurses and hospital workers, of telling them about consequences for publicly denouncing the state or publicly claiming lack of adequate equipment. But there is a unified voice on these left groups, the political left, against the divestment of hospitals, against the opportunism. I would say that the anarchist movement shares some of these things, and also the autonomous movement. Both would be, I would say, considered left or post-left in the States, but neither would consider themselves or identify as left here, but are obviously anti-right and anti-fascist. I would say anarchist groups are focusing on other grassroots projects, specifically for prisoner support, solidarity campaigns, because there's been multiple hunger strikes as the quarantine measures inside prisons have prevented people from continuing their studies. It has been used to isolate certain prisoners, to move certain prisoners. They have used the coronavirus inside the prisons just as much as they have in the refugee camps and just as much as they have in the overall country. But there are a lot of solidarity campaigns. Anarchists are also actually coordinating mutual aid projects, which are actually come at the risk of consequences, whether it's ticketing or detention by police. They have to actually determine that, but there's been efforts of going to refugee camps and attempting to provide resources and food. Also Roma camps, there's been various projects to do this. There's even been various projects of going to nursing facilities, and there are many resource collection projects, mutual aid projects is what they're called in the States, at some of the various social centers that are still around or legal, as many squats have been evacuated during the coronavirus, another opportunistic measure by the state. I think that anarchists are also doing graffiti campaigns and banner campaigns, but like I said, people are doing everything they can to stay relevant and make sure that regardless of this isolation, people know that there is still a movement beyond this intense real time. A lot of courageous things are happening, but it's just a scary moment to actually where you feel that it's fairly helpless. Many courageous people continue to demonstrate. Actions happen in various ways, and you cannot go outside without seeing fresh graffiti and banner campaigns and so forth.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. Follow us online at itsgoingdown.org and on Twitter at @IGD_news. In order for It's Going Down to continue into the future, though, we need your support. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to sign up to donate monthly or give us a one-time donation. Again, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to donate monthly or give us a one-time donation in order for us to grow our work into 2021. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to it. Over this weekend, there was an uprising that happened in St. Louis. There's an article on It's Going Down if you want to see a statement from one of the prisoners. But this is the third disturbance at this facility where COVID is spreading since December. I'm curious, is this something that's been going on in Greek prisons? Have prisoners been launching either revolts or protests? I know in the U.S. it's been pretty widespread. There's been hunger strikes and all sorts of actions by prisoners that have been supported on the outside, also in ICE detention facilities as well. But there's just been a huge problem of, COVID, spreading very fast. And of course, the conditions in U.S. prisons and jails and detention centers are so bad that the people are really facing a life and death situation.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, I don't have the specifics in front of me, but I mean, it's a daily constant struggle by all prisoners. You know, strikes have happened. Multiple hunger strikes are happening right now by various political prisoners, and just prisoners demanding simple hygiene, simple adequate soap, adequate sanitizer, the ability to socially distance. But rather than that, people are packed into inadequate, unhygienic facilities, and you know, they're seen, just like in the refugee camps, as they are contained. They are not spreading the virus outside of the prisons. They are contained. However, there's no safety precaution for them. You understand? It's like they are quarantined as a undesirable possibility of spreading infection. But as long as it's inside the prison, it's fine. You know, and I think that's been their approach. And like I just said in the last question, the woman in control of prisons has invested in staffing, in measures that do nothing to protect the prisoners. So there is constant resistance inside the prisons, constantly, without a doubt. And there have been noise demonstrations. It's just, you know, every year, for example, there's a noise demonstration at the refugee detention facility here called Petrarali, and also Korydallos prison in Athens. And it's this is the first year that unfortunately it became not possible. You know, I don't know how long it's been happening, but it's very unfortunate. But noise demonstrations have happened, as well as similar to happening in the States, as well as demonstrations in the streets for prisoners, you know, and like I said, graffiti and banner solidarity campaigns. And even now, demonstrations have happened regardless of being met with extreme police presence, you know, just to demonstrate that people, no matter what, are going to show up courageously to show their support. I would say that you referencing the uprising in St. Louis, which was very inspiring to see. However, I imagine the conditions that motivated such a courageous act were probably heinous. However, I would say that it's just a different version here. I mean, your ICE detention camps could be just another reference to the refugee camps of Greece, and the measures and lack of concern for prisoner life. And just kind of packing away immigrants and prisoners as, you know, expendable people that are isolated from the broader society that, you know, it's just the same here. And I would actually say, even though I've already described it, is that, you know, a lot of the anarchist efforts that are happening here are actually quite similar to what I've read about in the States.
I'm curious, you know, in terms of the mutual aid projects there, I know there's been a lot of discussion critically about the role of mutual aid. In the United States, they're pretty expansive, and I know in other countries like Britain, sort of the mutual aid kind of meme, if you will, kind of even got outside of control, so to speak, of the anarchist movement and just kind of entered into the popular kind of consciousness. And in some instances was even kind of recuperated by the state. I'm just curious, you know, is that something that you're seeing as well? Just like kind of like the government sort of like recuperating that kind of spirit of mutual aid, like, you know, everybody kind of help out, basically calling on people to do the things that the state is refusing to do.
Greece has always been the poster boy of Western economic crisis. Like, I'm not always, but in recent years, you know, it's they're like one of the first so-called first world countries that are brought up when it comes to like a modern failure in capitalism. But so there is limited resources for the state. People are just being held afloat by the state. I mean, they're given just enough to get by, maybe. And there's a different situation in terms of the housing situation here. Many people have the ability to go be with their parents or you know, their family's own property. There are very different elements of everyday life here. Like I said earlier, about this kind of stagnant crisis, somehow the state is able to maintain its base, get the funding it needs from the EU, and somehow continue just prolonging this situation, even though depression is inevitable, if not already here. It's a stagnant crisis. But, you know, of course there are NGOs and humanitarian groups that are also attempting to provide support for refugees inside of camps on a grassroots and institutional level. Of course, there are some Christian groups, not many, not as much as the States, but that go around and give, you know, homeless people food at night, you know, likely right before they get abused or harassed by the police, to be honest, whenever the cops get bored after curfew. But, you know, there is strong efforts by of resource collection and solidarity efforts by anarchist groups that, like I said, actually run the risk of being consequenced due to not being in line with whatever police they encounter in the process, even though helping people is technically one of the reasons you're able to go outside. It was intent on people going to help their grandparents, for example, but it can be used to, say, feeding people. But also, for example, the state hasn't been able to really prosecute anarchists doing mutual aid in some efforts because there's been some media about them supporting Greek old people, elderly people in nursing facilities, which kind of made people sympathetic, even their own conservative base. However, the Roma community support and the refugee support continues to be, you know, potentially criminalized in some ways. However, these things are happening. I personally find it almost courageous just organizing and coordinating these efforts amidst so much police pressure and so much bureaucratic intimidation in terms of fines and legal bullshit. But it is happening, and considering how fucked things are and how you know, poor our movement is at this time, it is remarkable. And I think you know, keeping the movement relevant and bridging and creating bridges between, you know, the excluded and discontent during this stagnant crisis, you know, hopefully creating a more, you know, unified demographic of discontent people whenever things erupt. I hope that makes sense, you know?
A lot of this stuff sort of ties into some broader things that are going on in terms of capital, whether it's, you know, increased militarization of borders, whether it's sort of like automation in the gig economy, whether it's sort of this acceleration of gentrification. I'm just curious, you know, how does what you're seeing with coronavirus tie into some of these broader forces that are happening within current neoliberal capitalist order?
I mean, you said a few already. I mean, like I said, the best metaphor that I said this whole thing is 1 million euros or 870,000 euros. For Christmas decorations that people can't even see after 9 p.m. because of curfew. However, you can't get fucking hand sanitizer on the metros, which have been known to be the biggest spreader of coronavirus, which, you know, obviously affects more poor people who can't afford socially distanced options of commuting to work, and also can't afford not to work because their jobs, unfortunately, have been deemed essential and they're getting paid the same wage that people who are at home waiting to get their jobs back are getting, except they have to go to work. Billions of dollars have gone into the military. $2 billion has gone to the advancement of the Greek military, because apart from coronavirus, one of the other big eye-catching themes of the, you know, media propaganda here is Turkey. You know, Turkish invasion every day on the news. So this has been used as a huge distraction. And apart from the divestment of hospitals to police, the investment in the military is unbelievably unprecedented and also remarkable considering how broke of a country Greece is. I would say also, you know, it's very interesting this, it's kind of quality of life policing that it's called in the States, but it's taken to a new level here where you're essentially told what is okay, like what the essential needs to be alive are, what you can do, what is okay, this and that, to a level that is, you know, I could never have imagined in my life in the Western world, and is so, you know, resembles so much a Black Mirror episode, for lack of a better reference. You know, it's just taking, you know, control of every element of your everyday life to another level. But I would say, more specifically, another thing that's happened here is the, you know, they kind of pause society, and, you know, Greece is a Balkan country. It borders Bulgaria, Albania, and Turkey. It's not, you know, this kind of Swedish, Norwegian, German, you know, efficient, you know, up-to-date country. It's, you know, when Uber tried to come, for example, the taxi drivers, you know, came together and attacked Uber drivers and, you know, striked, and, you know, Uber wasn't able to come to Greece, for example. But, you know, with the closing of schools, and the, you know, the closing of restaurants, you know, delivery automation apps, such as like Uber Eats, for example, have just, you know, spread completely, changing the framework of delivery culture in Greece forever, without a doubt. And also, you know, considering that there are delivery worker unions here, setting a framework for just debilitating future for those types of workers. I think that there's been multiple articles citing Greece's being forced into a future of more intense automation and also digital life. So yeah, I would say whether or not it's opportunistic or coincidental or in some cases was necessary, it's just remarkable how quickly Greece got pushed forward into this kind of more digital era. And I would say these applications like Uber, which we don't have here, but there's other versions like Wolt or eFood, these types of apps are making so much money and really, changing the culture of work here. I mean, for one example, you know, these applications specifically are not required to provide insurance the same way that Uber does, where they hire you as a freelancer, even though you obviously work for them. That is unprecedented in Greece. And this becoming the norm has already been discussed by mainstream lefts, such as Kukue and Syriza, as well as anarchist groups and autonomous groups. It's setting a precedent for a new anti-union, anti-worker kind of policy, which is just not, it's unprecedented in modern Greece. You would never, I suppose the States has a very different approach to workers and work, but the worker rights situation here is far superior than anything in the States. But these apps who've creeped in to deal with the digital and automated demands of a lockdown or quarantine Greece are just setting a whole new framework that concerns most workers and worker support groups and on the left and anarchists. Also, in terms of using the pandemic against, since we're, anarchists here, it's been used to evacuate squads, knowing that they would not be able to be defended as easily. It's been used to make arrests, make prosecutions, knowing that the solidarity efforts would be hinged by the lockdown measures. It has gone in and it's doing various construction projects and, gentrification efforts. They're looking to privatize. They already have privatized half of one of the most beautiful mountains that are in the center of Athens, like Kapitos, into restaurant. They're calling to privatize this previously and generally cop-free zone, which is a park at Strefi in Exarchia neighborhood. They're trying to sell that off. They're really to compensate for lack of tourism, they have also started to, which I should have mentioned earlier, privatize various wilderness areas for development and construction or resource exploitation to compensate for lack of tourism, because prior to the crisis, these places were considered valuable due to the entertainment it provided tourists based on its beauty. Now that they're not able to make money from tourism, they're looking to make money through its destruction. There are so many instances of capitalistic opportunism that are coming from the coronavirus here, in terms of privatization and pro-business policy. It's hard to even, stay on track, because no matter how much I talk, I feel like I'll just forget something.
Thought we might close with just thinking about the future, but also, as we speak, there's a round of demonstrations at the universities in Athens where the police are trying to stop people from gathering there, and anarchists and student groups are engaging in protests, which I think kind of just further kind of like hammers home what we've been talking about, how the state is using this as an example, an opportunity to push its own interests in the face of everybody else. I'm just curious, you could extrapolations for what's going to happen in the future and how people are preparing.
Well, first of all, these are just recent days there's a history there. The asylum laws stem from the junta, the military dictatorship in the 60s, killing multiple students at the Polytechnic University in Athens. Up until the new administration came to power, police were not allowed on campuses. So there was a very unusual freedom that I don't think people in the States could understand on the university campuses here. It wasn't just for students to study. They were used for parties, political events, organizing assemblies, things like this. They've been shut under the coronavirus, and any attempt to reoccupy them has been met with extreme force. The anniversary of this day that lies at the foundation of the original asylum on campuses, where the military dictatorship in the early 70s killed so many students, they arrested 90 people for attempting to go to the university. I suppose one of the best examples of that day was a woman who passed by and left a flower at the memorial site of the murdered students, and was detained and given a 300 euro ticket for leaving a flower. I think also on December 6th, which is a very kind of the day of anarchists here for the memorial of Alexis Gagropoulos, an elderly woman passed to try to pass flowers as well, and a police officer would not allow them to get near the memorial site of his death. And there was a video footage of the officers taking her flowers and smashing them on the ground. Additionally, on this day, there was a perimeter around the memorial site and a perimeter around the neighborhood. Anyone, even walking through, who looked suspicious was detained and potentially arrested. One individual who's a French citizen, was actually detained and arrested on this day and deported, which is actually a violation of EU law, being an EU citizen. However, under the guise of the coronavirus and to make a statement towards anarchists, he's been deported. On this day, there were some demonstrations happened around the city, but everything met with extreme repression. But more recently, as you described, the student demonstrations that are being held to battle against the policy of having police on campuses, in various other attempts to, I suppose, Americanize and further privatize the university system here, which is extremely public and free, much compared to the States, obviously. The fact that, as I said earlier in the interview, you know, you see comparable or even higher numbers of people concentrated outside retail shops and, you know, chain restaurants, you know, within perfect view of the police with no attempt to enforce social distancing mandates and so forth. But any attempt to assembly politically, unless it's in line with the, you know, the base of the new administration, potentially a Christian demonstration or people, you know, attending church as an act of civil disobedience, which probably goes overlooked. Any assembly that opposes the current administration, and especially anything that is anarchist in any way, comes with extreme repression. And you see the enjoyment of the police during this very, taking advantage of this very vulnerable time for a movement that both wants to show respect to demographics of people who are at risk, but also don't want to come on the other side of this situation and essentially, you know, come to a new era of helplessness where the government has realized its capability of enforcing authoritarian measures with little resistance. However, as I've said multiple times, this, something will change, something has to change. No matter who, no matter what their politics, you know, this is an overwhelming, unprecedented situation, and the government will not be able to hold on to this lockdown forever, even if it feels like forever. And eventually, they're gonna, this looming economic depression, apart from catastrophic situation happening in refugee camps, the medical situation in prison facilities, and also the infection rates that are, you know, proportionally quite bad for the lockdown and the population here, you know, and on top of that, the economic precarity, something has to erupt, you know, I have to say that. And what I do know is that regardless of how hard it is to just demonstrate, you know, and how scary it is just to raise a banner or go into the streets, people are like, you know, it's courageous, and I'm humbled to say that, like, people really are showing up for political prisoners who are on hunger strike, are showing up to let refugees know that they're not isolated. They are showing up to know that this discontent exists and things will not be tolerated. So I do hope that this kind of eruption does happen at some point soon. You know, this isn't life, this is survival, you know, it's really quite overwhelming. And I wish that I could just say a prediction, you know, but I suppose that is, you know, a question that everyone in the world is asking right now, you know. I'm just hoping that we'll come out stronger on the other side. I don't know.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us, and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.